Cleaning up means shoving everything into a cupboard, I just heard.
Yes.
The nice thing is it's a stained glass cupboard. You can still see everything. And normally you don't have to clean up for a podcast because nobody can see you. But now you have Matthias sitting over there.
Yeah, because he's taking photos too.
Did you put on your jacket just because?
Yes, because he's taking photos. Because I don't want to look like a bum.
It's like Trudon, settle down. Fun.
I feel like there's a burp right here and it won't come out.
Yeah.
Do you ever get that?
Do you think you can do it?
Like, I'm working on it.
Just do
it
now.
No, I'm working on it.
Pound your chest a couple times, like a baby. Like,
ooh. This is ineffective in all ways.
Okay.
Who's good? What, afternoon? Jesus, yeah. I was going to say good evening because we're so used to that.
No, it's still light. It's actually good today. It's beautiful.
It's sunny, but it's still cold.
People on Instagram Live actually can not per se hear everything we're saying. But
we're not doing
see
this live now, right? She's taking videos, right?
Ah, okay. I thought it was live.
So it is. We have a few changes as of today. Today will be the first day ever that we are recording from not only the Raft office, but the new Raft office. So if it sounds a little bit different or if things are a little bit confused, this is why.
Yeah, so it sounds small with all the echoes, but it's actually super big.
I think with all the echoes, it would be a larger office, right?
No, it's a short echo.
And joining us this week as well is our research and strategy lead, Prima.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So we figured now that we're in the office, we can just start grabbing people and pulling them into whatever discussions we want. And we also have somebody, Adriana. You know, it's hard because everyone doesn't know the full cast of characters at Raft.
Not yet.
But we have Adriana now filming us to put on Instagram, and I had to change clothes for that.
Yeah.
So I didn't look too much like a bum.
Now you're wearing a jacket that makes me dizzy, so I'm going to look at Prima today.
You can look directly at my face. I think you like it. So yeah, we're out of my living room, we're in the office, and today we are going to be talking about, oh man, how do we want to introduce this topic? It came around this whole idea of what does identity mean in an era where news articles are now written by AI and sort of the deep fake, video fake aspect. And then also the article that we were looking at that spawned this version of the podcast was people were totally being created out of thin air alongside these articles, and so that you had fake people, fake articles, and how could you tell reality from non-reality or make-believe, essentially? And that's where we got back to that question of what is identity?
Yeah, I was especially interested in the article that was being generated by an AI algorithm, right?
Yeah, so this was from TechCrunch.
Yeah. So what was the company again? Can you look it up? Because as I said,
the company was OpenAI.
Oh, it was OpenAI.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So they're creating an algorithm that can basically write longer paragraphs of text after they've trained it on a super large corpus of other texts. And before they were pretty much like, we open source everything. We think all these tools can benefit the world. And then at some point, this thing was getting better and better, and they had it generate a piece of text about recycling this week. And the piece of text that it wrote was actually a fairly negative piece of text that had very authoritarian rhetoric in it. It felt very much like a certain person was speaking very loudly into a microphone about why things were bad. Do you want to
Okay. I thought this was going to be intelligently written, but let me tell you, this OpenAI algorithm is no Thomas Pynchon or whoever your famous author is, or your favorite author is, because here are some of the lines here. Recycling is not good for our health. It contributes to obesity and diseases like heart disease and cancer. Recycling is bad for our economy. It increases the cost of a product and, in turn, the price of everything that is made with that product. It's just not good writing. It's just sentences that are being constructed. By the way, Prima, you're just going to have to start jumping in here. We don't necessarily pass around the baton here, so you can just start yelling at us whenever you need.
Especially if we're wrong. We like that.
Sure. Continue. Read more further.
No, we're good about reading.
I don't know. I think the point here is a little bit like, what do you think the role of AI creativity or creation is about? Do you think that you want to read something created by AI? Is that what we're trying to do here? Because then we can say, well, that's a piece of bad writing.
Well, I think at this point, it's just people running experiments to see what is possible. I don't think people are actually thinking in this way, what is the point of AI? Because I don't think AI is going to become a journalist all of a sudden. It's not going to go out and interview people. It could, you know, potentially down the road. But right now, it seems more like experimentation of, can it be trained to be smart enough to fill in the blank after that?
Yeah, I think in the process as well, what I find fascinating about that piece of article is I never thought recycling is bad, but I was just looking at the arguments of seeing all these random thoughts being put together that I, being sort of socialized into thinking about certain things being right and wrong, and then being sort of like contradicted by these random thoughts, and I think that's sort of creative. I never thought of things this way. So, okay, recycling is one topic, but I can see how that can be applied to many other things that can sort of inspire me to think of things, put things together in ways I just never thought of.
What scared me was that clearly none of the arguments made sense, but no. At the end of it, I had less of a good feeling about recycling than at the beginning, because maybe one of the facts was true.
Mm-hmm.
And it just this thing wasn't even based on research or anything. It just grabbed words and tried to form a sort of a opinion in words without having an actual reason for having that opinion, right?
So I think this is where it gets tangible, right, is in the, or at least where it's been popularized, is the elections, right? Because people basically do self-reinforcement of situations. So if somebody didn't like recycling, they would see an article like this written by whoever, it doesn't have to be known that it's an AI writing this, and then all of a sudden it doesn't matter if the arguments are cogent or not.
Yeah.
It simply does something reinforce what I feel, and therefore it cements more that position because it's online, therefore it is authoritative, thereby confirming what I wanted to confirm.
And how many times do people start to believe things on the internet more by the amount of research or search results that a search engine like Google gives back? Like, well, there's 10,000 articles written about this topic, so there must be something true about it, right? And an AI can really quickly generate so many versions of the same opinion in different words written by different fake people or whatever.
I think that's very true. But then at the same time, I think that is happening with or without AI anyways.
That's
so
true.
It's the speed and volume of which that's happening faster.
Yeah.
When you say without AI, do you mean just like more and more people are online with an opinion?
Yeah, I mean, when tapping into some of the current political situation, a lot of the Russian involvement in the whole election, basically they have already found out that there's a bunch of people in Russia writing just fake news, you know? They just keep writing and optimizing it and then see which one actually gets the most view. And there are people, very cheap labor, sitting at the desk doing that already.
So if you look at it, taking a step back, the AI technology is just making us aware of the possibilities. And maybe the only kind of invention here, if you're using it for your own gain of spreading lies,
mm-hmm.
it's only democratizing it, making it cheaper.
Yes,
it
faster,
makes me
cheaper.
Able to do it without a Russian army of writers or wherever they're from.
Yeah, pretty much. But I think that's how technology has always been in that role of basically making something happen faster at a larger quantity. You know, that's is kind of what's the right word for it. Basically, it's like industrialization. It's like machines comes in and makes things more efficient.
Yeah.
So is the problem here that the articles that AI is writing are poorly supported documentation-wise? Because I want to lead this into what's the solution.
Yeah.
And I want to, and I have a path in my head that I want to take us down. And I'm curious, like, what's the problem with this? Is it because we're worried about people using it for bad things? Is it because it is written without good sources? Is it because it is replacing jobs? What's the bad thing here?
I really think that the technology itself is pretty neutral, you know? It has always been neutral. Technology has always been neutral. I mean, even if you take very extreme technologies like weapons, you could say it's for protection, you can say that it's for violence, but the object itself is neutral. It has always been the intention and how people have used it that has caused the problem. I think AI is the same thing. You can see a lot of very good use of it, like how it can help people to do scientific research in a much more efficient way, uncover disease and all these things, sequence genome and all this stuff. It can have good applications of it. At the same time, certainly when you think about how it can manipulate people into believing things that are not real, how can it be used in advertising, manipulate our purchase behaviors? Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the negative side of it.
I don't feel like that's a good response. I'm trying to figure out why, because it feels like it just it shuttles the responsibility away. It's like, yeah, sure, everything is neutral and that's fine, but it feels like if you take an example of a gun or a car, there are specific situations in which that is applied, and therefore you can create regulation around those situations. Whereas AI is sort of like, it is something that in theory down the road can morph into lots of different things. So this is my problem with like people writing, you know, we have to be protective, or we have to be scared of AI writing news articles. I'm like, why? Oh, because it can use it for the wrong, you know, situation. It can create lies. I'm like, well, so can people. So are we worried about that from the amount then? Are we worried about it because I don't agree with what that says, which is a different thing. And to me, that leads down the whole situation of, you know, if we go back hundreds of years with the press, why do I believe the press? Right? Why do I believe it? Because there is some sort of journalistic integrity that exists that I have to put faith in, sort of like money, right? That there is some sort of blind faith I put in that. But then at the same time, you can make the argument that the Washington Post is going to be more liberal. The Economist may be more central or possibly right. I don't know. And I don't know what right-wing papers are. Because I don't necessarily read them. I don't know why I said papers, because nobody reads a physical one anymore. Do you get the idea that I'm...
Yeah, I think you brought up a really good point. It's about like regulations and new roles being created to sort of govern and police these sort of things. But when you really look back into human history, a lot of technologies or innovation happens before regulations. Regulations has always been in the position of catching up. Because at
responsive.
This point...
Because responsive. You can't tell where something's going to go.
So, you know... We're called Let's Fix Things, so let's get to that in a second.
I was getting to the point of where we're going.
Yeah.
Prima's distracting me. Prima's is a lot of problems over here.
I'm exploring the problem space first.
So let me throw one curveball.
It's a cowbell.
the only thing that scares me is not the volume, because you can create that by having lots of people, or by having lots of time, or by having lots of money. The volume is not your problem. What could be the problem in this, and that's actually not something that they've built right now at OpenAI, phishing attempts don't work really well when they're general, when one email is sent to 10 million people. They work very well when one email is specifically targeted to persuade one person. And this algorithm actually has the economy of scale to personally target everybody with the reasons that would switch them, right? And this is actually what they were talking about with the Cambridge Analytica scandal, that they had the metrics to tackle people's personal opinions to figure out how to topple big groups of people with specific articles, and then they wrote them. This is the tool that Cambridge Analytica would have loved on top of their analytics to do this even better at scale for everybody.
So is then, I'm going to go back to the situation, is the problem that news is written on an individualistic format, or is it that incorrect, improper news is written? And then it goes into that conversation of, well, what do you define as improper?
Yeah, so I don't care about it being news or anything else, but if it's about manipulation, whatever it is, it's always better if it's on the person. Right? And manipulation works best if you understand how a person thinks. So I think this algorithm by itself is a tool, just like a pair of scissors is a tool. And I'm supposed to cut paper with it, but it can also stab a person with that same thing if I want to. So I think this algorithm is just a tool. It writes texts. Except if you feed this algorithm...
It's crappy text.
Yeah, it's crappy text, but lots of people will fall for it. Don't worry about that bit.
I'm sure.
There's lots of crappy articles out there that people read as well.
Most of mine.
Yeah. The ones you read or the ones you write. But but my point is that this technology can be combined with other things to be weaponized, and I think that is what would be my main worry about it.
Yeah, I think you articulated it very well. I remember reading this one article about, not just about creating text, like words. So there's lots of research have shown that, you know, who do we like most? We like people look like ourselves. So we always look for faces that have similarities to our own. So you can imagine how you can apply technology like this to actually persuade you, who's to buy something. It's really by merging your facial characteristics to some kind of computer-generated face. And instead, items back to you. And then I think that's pretty...
In a dishonest way.
In a right? very...
Because yeah. if it would just be my face.
Why do you guys have to go down the dishonest route? Like, I'm really trying... Because I think everybody sees these things and they immediately say, oh my God, we have to stop this.
Yeah.
We have to regulate it. But people don't think through what they're asking regulation for. And I feel like the better response is, how do we build up, whether that's academies or businesses or whatever it is, that has some sort of stamp of integrity. And I haven't thought through exactly how you get that stamp of integrity. I don't know what it means. Oh, God. Okay, what are you going to say? What are you going to say? You're going to try to come back and argue against me?
I lifted up my little finger.
Because you're going to lose. Let's do it.
Well, I really think that fundamentally, I think the way that we've been rewarding people and motivating people, that drives only one type of behavior. The only metrics that anybody in any company is measured by is profitability, how much money you make at the end. So, of course, there's only one outcome is growth. How can I expand? How can I get year-on-year revenue growth? But we never consider any other kind of metric systems that we measured ourselves by, like environmental protections, like social responsibilities. You look at the stock exchange. The only thing they measure by, again, is how much your stock is going up.
You just went 100% hippie on me.
Well, you know I go to Burning Man, so.
I know. Okay, I feel like that is, you're trying to boil the ocean in that case, right? Because you're saying we need to totally readjust how we evaluate things on a global level. I'm not going to disagree with you, but I also feel like it's a moot argument because it is so completely foreign to what we're doing that it just seems you're going to, if you say that, it's not going to go anywhere because people are just going to say like, okay, yeah, great, but
sure,
that's not how the rest of the world works.
Big problems require big and bold changes. Like for example, environmental protections and all these things. Every year, everybody talked about this and that little regulation change and stuff like that. Nothing happens. Nothing changed.
No, yeah.
So problems do exist.
Wait, Chris wants to say something.
Yeah, I want to use this thing for myself. I want to use this algorithm where I type in a certain problem space or whatever, and I want it to go and crawl the internet and write me an article on that problem with a certain lens on it. Currently, we're working on looking for people who are using public transport, how to make them aware of how much better that is for the environment. Now, it turns out that quantifying that into a number, you'll always get down to CO2 reduction, which is very not sexy. And also very heavy to calculate on a personal basis. And I've been trying to do lots of research, but all of this research ends up in very dry research papers and organizations that are for world betterment, but there's nothing about that that helps me as a designer come up with a good solution to this. So I would love this algorithm to actually do all of that search work for me and make it into something that I can read instead of me searching the whole internet and trying to combine these things.
Well, now we go back to Chusbot.
Yeah.
Right? Because
exactly.
Like, is this thing an extension of you? And this gets back to that identity question that we didn't really go too much in, but can you have something else write your articles for you? And is that still you?
And but they are for me. That's the cool thing. Because you can now have a robot that writes stories for you about topics that you request in the style that you consume easiest. So instead of us being worried of this writing lots of stuff that's going to be published, publish it for me. I just need it for myself to read something. So you're actually using it to grab all the information, all the rhetoric together, instead of you crawling the internet and figuring things out.
It's kind of like a smarter Google search.
It is, yeah, except Google is lots of clicking and lots of reading and combining and copy and pasting, and this thing can make it into one story that I'd like to read.
Hmm.
Well, I think what's interesting about that is you look at something like where Google goes, or where does search go? So one of the things that we've maintained or we've talked about over the past, for long-running people over the past few years, is the idea that search and browse is going to have to change as you move into different input patterns and output patterns. So voice is the easy example here. You can no longer search with voice in the same way that you searched on your screen. You just can't put, a list of 10 things in front of somebody like that. So in that case, is the evolution of search actually not search, but presentation?
Can this thing convert my raw meeting notes into something that I can present?
I'm pretty sure that should... Well, you...
But that will be super cool.
Not my meeting notes, because half of it's in your head probably, right? But the idea of taking raw crap and refining it, I'm assuming that's possible.
You know, like there was this tool that would help you build beautiful websites by you just giving it a topic and then it would style it automatically.
The grid.
Yeah. So what if the grid actually would start to work for presentations or for speeches or whatever? And you can actually just use this to try and auto-generate, and you can grab bits and pieces from that. And every time you hit refresh, it builds a good story. It can give writing skills. Right now, it can't really give good writing skills. We've done that, but it'll get better and better over time. It can just help you spark creativity. Sometimes you just need to look at random things to get good things in your head.
Yeah, I think I read also in that TechCrunch article that they're using it for architecture already. So they can actually say, you know, I want a chair, you know, roughly what kind of materials, and then it kind of turns out a number of different designs. And as a designer, you can grab that and then refine it based on, you know, what you think.
Designers become curators. Thank you, AI.
Yeah.
I
thought you were going to say, thank you, I'm out. Knock your mic over.
No. But I seriously only need to have an opinion to design things? That's awesome.
Okay.
Because I have one.
So then there's your two big takeaways that somehow we managed to get to. The evolution of search is like individual publication of material based on your preferences to you, or individual viewing of material. And the growing role of designers is, rather than designing, you better be good at picking something out, because it is purely about curation. Would that make sense? So you just feed it information.
I would love to do a mic drop right now, but we have a pure concrete floor.
And you're gonna break the mic?
Yeah.
Well, it's our mics are enclosed in these little things. So as long as you drop it, this is the most pathetic mic drop ever. So what I think is interesting about that is there's this article that I used to keep on my desktop from a few years ago that was in Fastco, where they're asking, who was it? It was like Method, company in Seattle, Artifact. Thank you. I was like, I love these guys. I can't remember. But Artifact, Argo, and a few other companies, what the jobs of the future for designers were. And I think some of it was around coordination. I think some of it was, I'd have to look at, it was a fantastic article. It's like the top 10 jobs that designers will morph into. But I think that's interesting, because if you take something like, we work on NS, which is the Dutch Railways, and that's a mobile application, you can imagine that if you said, I want to get from point A to point B, there is enough relevant material globally on how to get from point A to point B and the different design patterns that you can take from that it could just generate within, you know, a minute, 20 different screens. And you're like, this one and this one, and then riff micro interactions based on that. This one, and then within half a day. It seems like it takes our job to nil. So then is our job more about strategy and direction, which is why Prima's here, which is awesome. Thank God we're already ahead of this curve.
Yeah, exactly.
Hire us for that.
Yeah. You don't need a designer anymore. You just need a strategist and a curator. That's it. Okay.
Is that a bleak future, or is that a good future? I like that future.
As long as you're not starting out in design right now. Students.
I think people whine and bitch a lot way too much about, like, no, everything's got to remain the same because I have special talents that nobody else has. Bullshit, you don't have extra special talents. Like, grow up a little bit and you know, grow your talents in some sort of direction that's useful. I know you want to say something.
I studied industrial design when touchscreen phones didn't exist. And now I design apps. So stop whining about things not changing. They do all the time.
And that's the thing. I just don't. Well, and also, I don't know if it's designers. I mean, since I work in design, you get this a lot. But I think it's probably every discipline is like, I'm special. I can't be replaced. You can be replaced. Someone will replace you. Something will replace you. Look at Figma or anything like that. Design libraries. But
also, the design mindset is to always improve whatever is the status quo. So if we don't want change, then we kind of have an internal conflict, not an external one.
Oh, I think we definitely have an internal conflict. You know, we're too special. But I totally disagree with that. I don't think it's bad that, to your point, strategist and curator, and you're done. That's your design team.
Awesome. I think we stop here.
Wait, I have to say one more thing. Why that's great is because with just those two people, you get to lower your costs, grow your profits in your face, Prima.
Oh, wow.
Boom. Now we can stop. No retort.
Well done.
Okay. So.
Did you want to say anything?
No.
You're not even near the mic now.
I was just saying I can't even top that now.
You made her angry. Okay, good job.
Well, she does sit across from me, so she'll probably just knock the light over on my desk or something. So, Jus, Prima, well, we can now do this any day we want because we have the mics in the studio. So,
true.
Thank you, and yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thank you for having me.
Cool. Later,
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay, so to follow up on our Instagram from last week, This today was the first time I did one of those stupid things where you answer a question on someone's Insta story, and you know how it's like, I'm going to ask you some sort of question that is a word it's a problem within the way the question is formatted. And in this particular one, the grammatical question was not followed by a question mark, thereby not having it be a question. So it was like a trick question, essentially. But I hate that kind of shit, right? And so now this was the first time I actually reposted on my Insta story. And now people are answering the thing. And I'm like, I have to now post another story that says, I just did this for fun. And I actually argued in my Insta story that it was a bunch of bullshit. So why are you answering me? By the way, all of you are answering incorrectly thus far, regardless of the grammatical improperness of this, or no, the grammatical improperness of this, or the answer of the question itself, if it were framed as a question.
So do you remember you talking about
you want inspirational quotes?
You only needing digital friends? I now know why.
Why?
Because they will be nice to you even if you're not nice to them. But these guys hate you now.
No, nobody hates me. It's just they're answering the wrong thing and wasting my time. I need now to post another story that says, please stop responding. It's like that situation where everyone responds to everybody else by saying stop talking on a conference call, or someone someone joins and then they're all like have to start over again.
Who just joined?
Prima.
No, it wasn't Prima.
That was it. We got you back on the mic, and this was it. This is gonna be. I'm gonna tell
like
her
just a massive diss.
I'm gonna tell Lena to do this as the outro. Outro, Lena.
I'm gonna stop this recording.
Okay.
Bye.